Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs.
Issue 127.
Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com.
Ben Flanagan of AL.com.
Craig, what's up?
Hey. Oh, you know, same old. How about you?
You know, same old, same old. So, something's on my mind here. Ever since the release of the teaser trailer for Disney's live-action remake of Beauty and the Beast emerged on the internet, I've been kind of wincing about just the thought of it, and I know that there are going to be millions of people way more excited about it than I am or will be because of just how beloved, A, Disney is and how beloved the Beauty and the Beast property under the Disney umbrella is. But for me, there's just a fundamental issue with this string of Disney live-action remakes of the classic animated movies that you and I and so many other people grew up with. And I don't know if you feel the same way, but I think these movies are probably objectively very well made and more than likely very good movies. They've got high-quality casts and production value, and they get good directors. There's just something about the idea of them remaking the animated movies into live action sort of just because they have the rights and because they need an excuse to sort of reestablish the brand for themselves. There's just something about that that doesn't sit well with me personally. And when I saw the teaser trailer for Beauty and the Beast, it really sort of got under my skin more than the other ones have at this point, just because of how largely it depends on the nostalgia people have for the animated movies. And I've talked time and time again on Film Nerds Unlimited about my issue with remakes and reboots, and this just really is a great example of what I don't like about the establishment in Hollywood and in the assembly line of remakes and things like that we get. Do you feel the same way, or are you a big Disney fan who is as pumped about this as everybody else is?
I'll tell you what. Fret not. I'm sitting here. I've got my pen and notepad. You lay back on the couch, put your hands behind your head, and let's talk this thing through. So I'm not really... And then I'll diagnose your mental condition. I'm just kidding. I'm not one way or the other on these live action remakes. I'm with you on enough with the sequels, enough with the movie title : whatever comes after all these original movies. But there's something about, I think it kind of comes from the same place of view as the nostalgia, but I think there's something about that piques my interest a little bit. Of course, not all of these are going to be, you know, are going to be successful, or, and there's going to be some, when you, and the thing with Beauty and the Beast, wasn't it a Best Picture nominee?
Yeah, in 1990.
So that was like the first animated Best Picture nominee? It's why they created the animated category, right? I want to say.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not true, but, so I'm not as annoyed by it. What I think I find encouraging about the whole thing is that it's so close to the original. I mean, just from the opening note on that teaser, this is the same music, and then the characters start talking. It's the same characters, and it's like, you know, I don't know that they would stray too far from their original story, it being Disney making this movie, if they're going to have all these same characters and the same music. I mean, but then again, there is Maleficent, which went off the rails, in my opinion, at the end. But I don't know. I'm not as kind of annoyed by these as much, or at least not by the Beauty and the Beast one. But, you know, only time will tell. I'll watch it, and if it's ridiculous, then I will agree.
Well, it's funny you bring up Maleficent, because, you know, that's sort of the thing I have less of an issue with, where You're taking a familiar property like Sleeping Beauty, and you're at least trying something different. You're telling it from a different perspective, obviously. It became kind of a trend to see things from the villain's perspective. But, and you know, that's fine. You know, I actually never saw Maleficent, so I can't tell you anything about the movie itself. But I know that on the queue, we have something similar, like 101 Dalmatians. I think that's going to be a Cruella de Vil movie with Emma Stone that they're calling Cruella. And I don't know if those plans have changed since they initially sort of announced that, but that just sounds like an awful idea to me, personally. I can't really explain it to you, just the gut reaction that I have. I guess it's just me being the stubborn old man who's trying to hold on to the things I held so dear growing up. And I mean, by now, I understand how this system works and that these things happen and they're going to happen forever. But it impresses me so much less when, with something like Beauty and the Beast, which again might be a good movie and good for it if and when it is. But just the fact that, like you said, what they sold us in the teaser trailer was not this new movie. They sold us the 1990 movie. I mean, they basically just said, hey, remember this? Remember how great it was? Yeah, it's pretty awesome. By the way, we have another movie using the same title coming out in 2016 or whenever it's coming out. Instead of selling this new version of it, they're depending on your, just how much you treasure the 1990 animated adaptation of it. And every, you know, it's not wrong to celebrate that, but like part of me is like, why don't you just freaking re-release the original animated movie in 3D or something instead of going to all this trouble and spending probably upwards of $100 to $150 million
Did you just recommend a 3D release?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I hate 3D too, but it's like, you know, and I understand it from a business standpoint. It makes sense. That you know, most of what Disney tends to make sense, you know, like cars, even cars. And I know you're a car smart. Like even cars, all the business sense in the world. So good for them, you know, like they can line their pockets with all of these great ideas. But just, you know, I try to separate the business from the actual art as often as I can, or else I'll go nuts watching movies. But yeah, like you said, I mean. You mentioned they used the score, they used the characters, and then we get, I think we get a shot of the rose that was such a huge part of the 1990 movie. And I guess just what, again, the fundamental issue that I have with this is that these just kind of seem like, again, these exercises to reestablish brand, to obviously to sell tickets, but to take advantage of people's nostalgia for what Disney already did. And, you know, there was a time where Disney existed before Beauty and the Beast, and then somebody came up with the idea to make that movie, and then everybody loved it. And so now we're in a post-Beauty and the Beast world where apparently it's not possible to move on from that and create something entirely new, whether that's animated or live action. I don't like the trend, and I hate that Disney is falling into the same trap, this trend of just depending on what you've already done or what other people have already done in order to sell tickets or make more money. Make something new again, and I hate to pick on Beauty and the Beast, but right now it's just the one that's there, and I've got the bat, and it's got to be the pinata.
Well, if Disney's already made a Beauty and the Beast that's animated, and it's that movie we all know that I'm talking about, how many other Beauty and the Beast iterations have there been in the last 26 years since then? And how many have bombed, like all of them? I mean, there's not been a dozen of them, but there just recently was one, and it sucked. And I know you're saying don't even remake it, period. And I completely understand that. But I don't know. I think maybe it's split in a couple of groups here. People that cherish Beauty and the Beast in a way that any kind of remake or reboot in any form or fashion is offensive, and another group where they just they crave adaptations after adaptations. For instance, I don't like this epidemic of sequels and reboots, but what I do crave is adaptations of books I've read, and even and not even just once. I mean, I would like to see 8 different versions of a particular book I've read, because when I read a book, I get a mental image. I visualize mentally what the story's going on. It's my perspective. It's based on who I am, how I was raised. That's how I envision the story taking place. And my lack of imagination and creativity, it all plugged in together to give me my mental image of a book. Whereas if I see a movie, wow, that's one really creative person's idea of that book. Now let me see another one. Now let me see another one. Because everybody's is going to be different. But with this, I completely understand what you're saying with the Beauty and the Beast thing, but I think it's, for me and maybe for other people, it's that, oh, this is the same movie. However, it's going to be real people. I know what's going to happen. I know how it's going to end if they choose to go the same route as the original. I would love to go see it. And they kind of overlook the idea of, oh, it's just a moneymaker, or they're trying to rely on their own previously established product to make money, because you are going to get people that were kids when that movie came out. Well, they're going to go see it, and they're going to bring their kids if they have them. People that were adults that took their kids to see that when they came out, well, they're grandparents now, so they're going to go, and they're probably going to bring their grandkids. So it may not be the biggest, highest, or even top 10 grosser of the year, but it's definitely going to bring in some money, so that's true. But I don't know. I guess there's the same in a group of people that cherish that original movie from 1990. I guess you could be split them into a couple of different groups. One that's sort of annoyed at this, you know, business trying to, you know, kind of tainting the original in an effort to make more money, and another group that are like, oh, great, we get to see another version of this.
Yeah, and I get it. But if I'm Disney, and especially if there are still people there who were a part of the wave of Disney's reemergence as an animated force to be reckoned with when Beauty and the Beast came out, I'm thinking, okay, we did this. Now what? And like you said, there has been so much time in between that movie's release and now when this movie has been made, and maybe they feel like that window of time is so big that there is cause to go back and revisit these characters and try to tell this story in a different way. And okay, if that's what you want to do, go ahead. It's inevitable at this point. But I hate just getting the same stuff over and over again. Again, we got Beauty and the Beast. We loved it. We'll always love it. In fact, I want to watch the new one again, and I probably will pretty soon. But, you know, I'm glad Disney at least partners with a studio like Pixar, who obviously innovated animation and computer animation specifically, and really had a keen eye for storytelling and put that first, and doing something unique and original was part of that brand. And, you know, as we've discussed here before, Pixar also fell into the maze of prequelizing their brands that they created, the original stuff. And now we see, even with the success of things like the Cars franchise and the success of the Toy Story franchise, and now Finding Dory, which has been the number one movie for nearly a month now, Pixar has publicly announced that we're going to go back to original storytelling and coming up with new concepts and new ideas. And as they're counting their Finding Dory dollars, but perhaps they're looking back to 2015, when a movie like Inside Out, something that was totally new and totally original, captured the imaginations of the people who had Pixar fatigue and were skeptical about their future as brand builders and sequel creators and prequel creators. At least Disney has that, and I can go to Pixar under the Disney umbrella to sort of get this original filmmaking and these new ideas and new experiences from greater Disney if I can't rely on Disney itself, even though they make animated movies like Frozen and Zootopia and Big Hero 6. I know Big Hero 6 is not an original property, but if I can't go anywhere else, I guess I can go to Pixar.
Yeah, and, you know, they learned the hard way right from their sequels. I guess they had one sequel that was not good. But it was that type of failure is enough to sort of jolt them into another direction, you know, maybe even the opposite direction. Of course, I'm talking about the Cars 2 sequel. But, you know, then again, I don't know about you, but we had Monsters, Inc., and we've had Monsters University, which was a really cool prequel to Monsters, Inc. But I'm ready for a third Monsters that could take place on any point of the timeline, because we know they knew each other before college, and we know that there's plenty of story left after, you know. So it's just kind of there's Pixar has, as you said, while they're counting their Dory dollars, has left opportunities for sequels on practically all of their movies. But that's sort of sitting there in their back pocket while they're planning out this initiative to create new stuff, which I'm really glad they're doing that. But it's also comforting to know that someday, you know, we may not have seen the end of, you know, Joy and Sadness and Riley from Inside Out. But it's good that they're making an effort to go strictly to original material for the next few years at least.
Yeah, and honestly, they know that they would be stupid if they didn't make Zootopia 2 and Frozen 2, given those movies have made them billions of dollars. So I fully expect to see more adventures with those characters. And again, like, if we're just talking business here, it just makes too much sense to keep going back to those respective wells. And I understand that, and that's unfortunate, you know, that we have to grow up and get a little more cynical as moviegoers and understand that this is just how it works, and this is why we have so many sequels. I mean, I remember going back, like, trying to find out what movie came out on the weekend of, you know, 1989, what was playing at my local multiplex, and even back in, like, 1989, I noticed, like, this sequel was playing, and that sequel, and this one, and this was all the way back then. I was 5 years old, and there were still all these sequels being made. So, like, ever since, you know, while movies are still very young, just as a medium and as an art form, sequels are nothing new, and remakes are nothing new, and it will always happen. I guess you just reach a breaking point where I think personally, like, we're just in an age now where it's just the industry is just too dependent on it. And Disney, whenever in 1989, when it really started this boom in animated movies, it just seemed like something so new and so fresh, even though they were telling classic stories like Beauty and the Beast and obviously Aladdin and these other movies that they made. It felt new because it was new. We had never seen those stories told in the way that they were, obviously with the musical element. So I can at least say that even though this is a live-action version of it, I just don't think it feels new. And even though they're trying to reach it back into that bag and recapture the feeling and perhaps the spirit of something like Beauty and the Beast, I can tell you that the spirit of that movie, again, I'll reiterate here, was, wow, I've never seen anything like this before. And Disney, this has helped Disney emerge as a power player in this type of storytelling in this format. And if that's the feeling they're going for, which it may or may not be, I don't think they're achieving that. And this feels like we're treading old ground, and it seems like they're just doing it for the sake of it. Do you feel that way at all?
You know, I haven't thought of it that way. There are definitely movies that I see, I'm like, this is the height of unnecessary. But I guess I don't feel it with this. You know, you were mentioning sequels back in the day. You know, all those Disney animated movies had sequels, but it was like straight to video.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like the worst. They were like the worst of the movies ever made. Not really, but they were tough. Like, you can find them on like Netflix now, but it was just kind of like, they didn't even bother with a theatrical release, but they continued with those sequels. But yeah, you know, I guess I don't feel like Beating the Beast is just something just to do it. And maybe it's just my own, you know, personal perspective. Because, you know, Bill Condon's directing it. So he's definitely an experienced director with some... Well, he had some good ones back in the day, but he did the Twilight ones. But at any rate, have you seen the cast? It's insane.
Yeah, it's a laundry list of A-list
yeah.
names.
You've got Broadway, you've got West End, London, and you've got just plain old famous actors in it. And, of course, Alan Menken is doing the music, of course, because it's the Beauty and the Beast music, but I think there's going to be additional music to it. But, yeah, you know, I guess the way I kind of look at this whole thing is I definitely, and what you're saying about Beauty and the Beast, I certainly feel that way to other movies and some of these other movies on the dock to get released in the coming years by Disney. But I think with Beauty and the Beast, maybe I don't feel that way with this one, and it may have to do with just the fact that I like, maybe it was the first one they did, and it was such a strong one. The first one they did being the first live-action movie to make. They started with Beauty and the Beast. And the thing is, if they want this to succeed, this whole initiative, they got to start off with one of their best ones, and they have to knock it out of the park, or else it's going to be a disaster. So Beauty and the Beast is definitely one of their strongest, if not their strongest, animated princess movie. And if they bomb on this one, who's going to see the rest, you know? I mean, not you or I, probably, right?
Well, you know, so far they've made this, they've made Maleficent, we've had The Jungle Book, which was an enormous hit, and you've mentioned others that are on the way, like Pete's Dragon is one that seems to be in the can now, where it's coming later this summer, and you read me a list a little earlier. I mean, list off the ones that are...
Okay, the live action movies
that are coming up.
So they did Alice in Wonderland, which I didn't think was that bad. I kind of liked Alice in Wonderland. It's one of the highest grossing movies of all time. Is that right?
Yep.
So then, but I didn't go anywhere near Through the Looking Glass. It looked like I would have to get wheeled out of there in a stretcher, just from the induced. Seizures that I would probably have, or just nausea at the very least. But that got poor reviews. So, that's not a great showing, but, yeah. So the Peach Dragon trailer, which I saw in front of Finding Nemo. Hey, I mean, did you think that looked bad or did you think it looked okay?
I think it looks okay. Ben Stark, I think, has made a case in the past about remaking Pete's Dragon because I think there's more value in remaking something that had more of a lukewarm reception when it initially came out, and maybe they didn't get a great concept right instead of remaking what is really a consensus classic in the eyes of everybody. Like, why even bother? So, yeah, I think Pete's Dragon looks okay.
Yeah, I think that's where that split, because it's got such a huge fan base that it's going to split it into different people appreciate it for different reasons, and so you're going to step on some toes in that way. But I think it's about how the dragon looks. The dragon looks pretty cool, in that it's not a cartoon like the original. And I was a big fan of the original Peach Dragon, and it's also where I realized that Mickey Rooney is my raccoon. So we got the Peach Dragon, which could be good. The only problem with making a live action version of an animated classic is that if it's not it doesn't have a huge fan base and it's not, you know, highly beloved among a lot of people, you may not get a lot of people to go see it. So, okay. So here are the others. You mentioned Cruella with Emma Stone. Movies like that, it's just kind of like, what do you want to do today? I don't know. You want to go see a movie? Okay, what's out? Nothing. You want to go see the one with Emma Stone in it? Okay, let's go. You know, it's Cruella.
Yeah, it feels, exactly. It feels like, okay, let's give this movie star a project to just sort of show off. Let's see what this project would look like if we can get the best movie star that we can, and let's just make the Cruella movie. And yeah, I don't know. Again, maybe it'll be good. And I'm certainly open to movies like this being fine. It just goes back to the fundamental principle of, well, why don't you try something different? Because the people who work for your company, who came before you, they already did that, and they did it really well. And you're just sort of riding on their shoulders and depending on past success to create your own success. And honestly, it's kind of like, to liken it to the NBA, the big news recently were the Kevin Durant, this just incredible player as a free agent. And instead of trying to, you know, win his own championship and make his own great career, he jumped ship and he's, you know, remaking Beauty and the Beast. And he joins a 73-win championship team. And it's like, okay, well, that's fine, but I you can do that. You might win. You might have success, but I think I respect you a little less as a competitor, and I respect them a little less as artists. And, you know, I think we've all come to the conclusion now in this day and age of remaking and rebooting sequels and prequels, and accepting that as fact and just hoping for the best. It's like, as long as they're going to do it, just make a good movie, entertain us, you know, make our 10 to 15 bucks that we're spending here worth it. And again, I have no doubt that they'll do that because Disney has just done such fine work in the past, you know, 20 years, especially when it comes to animation specifically. And, you know, while these are going to be live action movies, they're all going to have their fair share of CGI and animation unto themselves. So, again, you know, you just have to sort of adjust your expectations, and you have to separate, again, the art from the business and just, you know, watch it for what it is, because it's going to happen. It's going to keep coming. You know, what's really interesting, Craig, is you brought up the era that I totally forgot about, sequels that were direct-to-video. Like, I remember it for, like, Aladdin. There was, like, The Return of Jafar and maybe Prince of Thieves, and then, like, Lion King had, like, Lion King 2.5. I'm having trouble remembering all of them. But I think what I'm saying here is I missed that era when these sequels were just like afterthoughts and were just released on home video, and they put way less effort in continuing those brands, and they focused on the next thing, right? So instead of Aladdin 2 coming right after Aladdin, what came next? The Lion King. It's like, no, we've got this badass story that we're going to tell next, and we can let, you know, the B-team handle the sequel. Return of Jafar or whatever. I miss those days.
Yeah. Well, you know, they were hurry enough to finish the second half of Lion King, so they were probably ready to get to the next sequel. Oh, but you know, Lion Guard, this show on right now, like, that's a good stuff right there.
I mean, oh, yeah? Show.
Yeah, but it's like, I mean, kids freaking love that stuff. I mean, it's insane. And I actually watched some of them. It's not bad. I mean, it's not something I'd want to watch on a regular basis. Of course, I'm not too, but yeah, and they're even doing that. All that to say, they're currently doing that on the Disney Channel with that one at least. I don't think they're doing it with any other old film that they made years ago. But okay, so yeah, they got Cruella, and then so Cruella, I guess it tells the story of Cruella de Vil.
Yeah, I mean, and that's another problem I have, Craig. Like, are they going to try and humanize one of the greatest Disney villains? Like, just straight-up villains of all time? Are we going to – I don't know. Are they going to end up trying to make us root for Cruella de Vil because they cast somebody as likable as Emma Stone in the part? Like, what are they doing here to their own mythology?
Well, it's what they were doing to Maleficent with Angelina Jolie and probably one of the most evil witches in the Disney animated world, Maleficent. So, but the thing is about Maleficent is that first half of that movie was really good. I enjoyed it, but then it just went off the rails, like just crazy. And I thought it suffered
for that part. But, you know, this idea of going, not only kind of making it a prequel, but sort of explaining why they're bad in a purposeful way, to sort of say, hey, they're not really bad. They just became bad because they were treated unfairly. And, you know, that started with, or at least the first I know of, with Wicked, the Broadway musical, which was based on a book that I have also read, that is a chore to read. It's very dense, and it's about the Wicked Witch of the West before she became the Wicked Witch, and it goes to all these great lengths to explain how she became who she became and how the people that we thought were good were actually kind of made her life miserable. So that idea of doing a prequel that sort of retells a story in a way, or super explains it, that's also getting reused much in the same way as these other existing properties are getting reused for live action movies.
Yeah. And we've had Cinderella too. And, you know, as long as they're successful, we're probably just going to get sequels for those too. Like Alice Through the Looking Glass. And you'd mentioned a Maleficent sequel. And I don't know. I just don't love this trend very much. But again, it's something we got to live with and we've got to tolerate. But it just doesn't excite me as a moviegoer as much as what Pixar is obviously doing. And like you said, I mean, Pixar had one bad egg in a sequel, and all of their sequels have been really good. So if
yeah.
you put your best artists on it and your best storytellers on it, regardless of it being a brand or part of a pre-existing franchise, maybe you'll get a great movie out of it. And maybe that'll be the case with Beauty and the Beast, but just based on its initial marketing, all it's told me so far is this is basically just going to be the 1990 animated movie. And wasn't that awesome? Don't you love that? Well, if you love that, then you're going to love this, because that's all we're trying to do. We're not trying anything else.
So, and I think that's interesting, because I think folks like me see that and are sort of comforted by that. They're both comforted and interested in that. But for others, I guess you can't change it at all. You just have to do the same thing. And in that way, it sort of hints at a deeper issue, in that they're just trying to rush things out and base it on existing properties just to make money or whatever. So, I mean, I completely understand what you're saying. But do you want to blaze through these other ones they've got out?
Yeah, what are they?
On the release list? Yeah, so we've got Cruella with Emma Stone, as I said. We've got A Wrinkle in Time, with Ava DuVernay attached to that one to direct.
Hmm.
It's interesting. That's actually a book I never read. I always looked at people reading it and thought, I bet that's a good book, because the title's kind of cool and the cover's kind of cool, but I never actually read it because I was like, I don't really care that much. But yeah, this is an interesting adaptation here, and with a proven director. So it'll be good to see what DuVernay can do with her next one, because she was rumored for a couple of other movies, wasn't she? Wasn't she rumored with a couple of the Marvel movies? Maybe?
Yeah, I think she was part of the Captain Marvel discussion.
Okay, so another Disney World ride turn movie. This one's called Jungle Cruise, which I just rode just a few months ago. You know, when they make Pirates of the Caribbean into a movie, and that movie inspires changes to the ride. So I actually rode Pirates of the Caribbean, and it's obviously like, you know, I rode that when I was little, and I rode that now, and I'm like, I don't think a Johnny Depp lookalike was a part of the animatronics on this ride.
So well, he is now, right?
He is now.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Are they going to have, like, The Rock giving the people's elbow to a gator on this Jungle Cruise ride?
Is he in Jungle Cruise?
He is. Dwayne Johnson.
All right.
A.K.A. The Rock, right?
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, if it's not another one of these kind of action movies, it's actually, like, got a sense of humor and some charm to it, and it's, you know, they're in this pontoon boat, and the animals are, you got animals and, like, alligators and elephants and monkeys and, like, native people just kind of all around you in the boat. I mean, that could be kind of cool if it's done with the right tone, but I mean,
yeah,
they probably won't do it that
well
way.
It's never been done before, right? And I mean, let's say, I'm sure that, like, Disney did everything in the 60s. There's just a ton of, like, Disney movies from the 50s and 60s, live action stuff that I just, there's just an enormous archive that I'm not aware of, you know, from the what was it, the, like, the computer that wore tennis shoes or something, or whatever, like, that era of Disney movie. But, like, so the ride adaptations, those don't bother me as much, just because, especially, like, the first time, like, Pirates of the Caribbean, that didn't bug me at all. Like, that's the it's the first time they did it. It's like, well, it had never been done before.
And it was a good movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. But then, of course, you know, five movies later, billions of dollars later, we have Pirates of the Caribbean fatigue. I think a lot of people do. I mean, there's a huge audience of kids who are excited to see it. When they go to Disney World and see the Johnny Depp animatronic and learn that there's going to be another movie, then they're probably going to go see it, and it's going to make another $1 billion. But you know, so those don't bug me as much. Are there more of the live-action adaptation of the existing animated movies coming out?
Yes. So we've got, well, it looks like the Jungle Book's getting a sequel.
Yeah,
and I'm going to skip over some of these rumors. Some of these are rumors seemed really far fetched, you know. So I'll just kind of go over the ones that are like pretty much official. You got the Tinkerbell project. I think Reese Witherspoon is kind of connected with that one. So I don't know. I mean, at least it's not Julia Roberts, right?
We got some Hook fans at FNU.
You know, I am too. I think Stark was the one that said that Julia Roberts was kind of off for him, and I actually agree with him. I think, I don't know. I love Julia Roberts, and I'm a really big fan of Hook, but it was just kind of, she wasn't really being Tinkerbell. Anyways, don't offend me with your inaccurate depictions of Tinkerbell. The Nutcracker and the Four Realms.
What?
Yeah, so they're doing a Nutcracker.
Well, didn't you say that they're doing another Peter Pan movie?
They are, yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We need another Peter Pan movie, immediately.
I think that might have been one of the ones that was kind of like a rumor.
You know what? Like, regardless of whether or not we know, I'm just going to guarantee you we're going to get another Peter Pan movie within the next 3 to 5 years, because I think the world falls off of its axis if there isn't a Peter Pan update.
Well, we've got like in this Beauty and the Beast, not to get back on Beauty and the Beast, but it's not a reboot, right? It's the same thing. We're just now realizing what 25 years actually feels like. Because we remember when we were 7 or 8, and when I was 16, 25 years felt like an eternity because I had no clue what it was. Well, now that I can remember 25 years ago, it doesn't seem all that long, but it actually is. It actually is, because you get your third Spider-Man iteration in a decade. And of course people are, you know, annoyed at that too, but I guess we've never had a movie just repeat itself, unless you're Michael Haneke and you want to do funny games, but at least the language was different.
Is he directing the Peter Pan remake?
No. In that case, forget everything I said. I can't wait to go see it. Dumbo's getting, I think Tim Burton's doing a Dumbo.
Oh, see, like in 1990, I would have been like, hell yeah, man, let's do this. But 2016, Tim Burton, that doesn't really excite me all that much.
Yeah, how are you going to do a live action at Dumbo?
It won't be live action. It'll be totally CG, you know? Like, it's so funny how we say live action with this stuff. It's like 40% live action.
Can you imagine a live elephant plummeting into a barrel from 80 feet in the air with nothing but a feather gripped into his trunk? And the PETA would have a nightmare, of course. Everybody would have a nightmare. That's the height of animal cruelty, to like push an elephant off a diving board 1,000 feet in the air. That looks like all of those. One other one that I think I'm interested in, this one. It is not a live-action adaptation of a animated movie. Well, at least most of it was not animated. And this is Mary Poppins, which I'm interested in this because it is my favorite Disney movie all around. Emily Blunt is Mary Poppins.
Oh, yeah. It's a sequel, isn't it?
It's a sequel, and it's a sequel. That's right. So I'm a huge Emily Blunt fan, as are you. Is that correct?
Yeah, of course.
And Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is best known recently for the musical Hamilton, is playing Bert,
So I don't know a ton about this project, but if he's involved, I think he's talented enough to, if he's involved in the music, you know, it's going to be unique and it's going to be really good. And he can be an interesting character on stage. So I don't know. That's a really interesting casting for me. And I know something that close to my heart is Mary Poppins is, I could be really easily offended at how it pans out. But I think something, this is outside of the box, you know. It's not a prequel. It's not a reboot. It's not doing the same thing over again. It's a sequel. And I'm a huge fan of both of these actors, so it could be really great. And these are, this movie is based on, or the original movie was based on a series of books. And they may be drawing from those same books to come up with a different story. Who knows?
Yeah. Lin-Manuel Miranda, as we're speaking right now, I believe that today is his last day to actually perform in Hamilton before he goes off and does his, you know, whatever else is next, perhaps, I guess, including this Mary Poppins thing. But that poor guy, he is going to be in such insanely high demand for stuff like this. Like, he's writing songs for the new Disney animated movie, Moana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that he's going to be asked to provide new music for the Mary Poppins movie. So pretty much wherever he goes, and maybe he loves this, maybe he's going to want to do all this, but he's going to be asked to, like, not only is he going to act in all these movies and you know, sing and perform in them, he's going to have to write all the music for a lot of them, too. And you know, maybe that's the opportunity that he wants, but I'm afraid that guy's going to get worked into the ground.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, when you're playing, when you're on stage 6 out of 7 nights and twice in one day a week over and over, and you're still, and you see this with a lot of these Broadway actors and actresses, and they're still so grateful. They come outside and they talk with their fans and they do all this extra stuff, and they're very responsive on social media and on the streets when you pass them by. And he's no exception, and it's going to be really interesting to see how he responds to this, you know, high demand that he's going to be involved with. Because he has some other minor projects going on while he was doing Hamilton. I think it took him like 6 years to even completely finish from beginning to end writing and putting together Hamilton. With all this, you know, all these projects going on at once, it will be fun to see him involved in all this stuff, but it'll also be really interesting to see how he responds to that.
Yeah, well, we digress. People like him and all of the people we've already mentioned here are involved in projects like these. It's great that they're getting the most talented people involved, but I'm more excited to hear his original music for this animated movie that's coming soon than I am for an extension of the Mary Poppins world, because Mary Poppins is a classic and it always will be. And I just think anything that's a classic, just because it's a classic, does not mean you have to build on top of that creatively. You can sell as much merch as you want, but I think that people sort of carelessly take the reins on these properties, just presuming that's what people want. Just because they already loved it before, that means we should just do it again and again and again. And so often it turns out badly. And not to say that that's the case with Disney all the time, but I don't know, man. Again, I'm more excited about the new original animated stuff that they're doing that I'm sure they'll remake in live-action format in 20 years than I am about the live-action stuff they're doing now, 20 years after the classic animated stuff. But that's just me, I guess.
So Rob Marshall's, just I was looking at this, Rob Marshall's directing this Mary Poppins. It's called Mary Poppins Returns. It's got a 2018 release date. And they already have a musical composition team that, and Manuel Miranda is not listed on that. So maybe he gets, that could definitely change, but maybe he gets a break from having to create stuff musically. So,
well, as long as Lin-Manuel Miranda gets a break, I think we're all
poor guy. He needs to stick around for a while.
All right, man. Are you good?
I'm good.
Awesome. Well, thanks for doing that and helping me kill time.
Yeah, did you merge, by the way?
Oh, shit.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.